From Sonoma County with love, Tony and Phil Katori. Katori Winery next on The Culture Catch.
Way down in New Orleans, everything's fine. All of them are catching just a-drinking that wine. Drinking that mess, here's the light. They get sloppy drunk and they sing all night. Drinking wine, smoothie, older, drinking wine. Drinking wine, smoothie, older, drinking wine. Drinking wine, smoothie, older, won't you pass that bottle to me?
Joining me today on The Culture Catch, the brothers from Katori Wines. I tell you, I love this story. I'm just hip to all of this. Who wants to tell me how it all started?
Let my older brother do all the talking today.
Older brother Tony.
Well, it actually started with our grandfathers. Our grandfathers on both sides were home winemakers. We grew up in the environment of making wine. One of my earliest remembrances is my grandfather on my father's side. He was a Katori. He had a little 50-gallon open-top barrel that I opened up the top and looked inside, and here were these grapes fermenting away, bubbling away, getting that beautiful smell of fermentation, and it's never lost my mind. I mean, I lost my mind, never left my mind. Just a great, great experience.
Well, it's traditionally made wines. You know, my brother makes wines without the sulfites or the addition of yeast. We use the natural yeasts that grow on the grapes. The preservatives are the alcohol and the tannins that are in the wines. My job as the farmer is to bring him sound fruit that expresses the terroir of the area that we're growing. And then he just handles it benevolently and produces the wines that he does.
Now, you guys are completely self-contained, so not only are you organic, but everything, you're not bringing grapes in from the outside.
No.
Everything is farmed, the compost, everything is organic.
Right. And we are... everything is farmed under my tutelage in my company, and we use all provincial inputs. And that's the basis of organic biodynamic farming, that you live in an area, the materials that you bring to the farm come from that area.
Everything's indigenous. Now, that's really the way you should eat anyway. I mean, you know, if you really look at food supplies and everything, we've lost a lot of that because, I guess, you know, these big conglomerations have just... co-opted all of the small farmers and said, look, this is the way you make food now. And it's not really the healthiest way to eat.
Exactly. I was in North Carolina talking to an organic farmer out by the coast, and we're standing in his field, and we look up, and here comes a semi with two trucks and trailers on the back that said another load of organic vegetables from California. And here's the guy standing there going, and, you know, he can't grow them as cheaply as they could grow in California and be shipped across the country. But what's the point?
Well, gentlemen, you know, when you used to say the word organic for anything, especially in your industry, in the wine industry, it was like, oh, this has got, it can't be good, it can't have flavor, exactly. It can't have substance, it can't have a shelf life. What was the point on the timeline where the switch got flipped?
Well, you know, as far as in the growing part of it, which is where I'm more accustomed to, it was when winemakers started tasting the grapes that I grow, other than my brothers. You know, my brother was so totally convinced on it. But when they get the flavors, and wine's all about flavors. And the other thing is, you know, it's environmentally friendly, and it's where most of the people live in their vineyards. You know, and all of a sudden they're saying, oh, we can produce great grapes, and we don't have to do it in a conventional fashion, and I'm living in the middle of it, so much the better. And so it was just an awakening and the ability to see winemakers are always after something that tastes better than the year before, and organically grown fruit tastes better.
Now, what was the year? Was this like in the 90s where people really started to get hip to it?
You know, I've been farming organically since the 80s, and I would say in the last 10 years it's really exploded, you know, and before... It was harder to farm organically because the materials that I needed weren't there. But now there's an industry around it, you know, and the last 10 years it has really exploded. And then you go to a tasting like this and you see it. It's not just California, it's worldwide.
Tony, you said something the other day that I thought, it really resonated with me. You said that, you know, you look at wine, and if you looked at all the ingredients, if they had to list all the ingredients, of a conventional wine that you buy off the store at your local liquor store, you'd be mortified. The sulfites is just one aspect.
One of many things that could be put in there. And the technology of winemaking, which is a book from the UC Davis, which is the college or university for teaching winemaking, there's six pages of single type of legal additives that could be put into wine without it having to be mentioned on the label, which is just incredible.
That's incredible. And then they talk about, well, this wine is so complex. Well, yeah, it's complex. It's got it's got a lot of chemicals in there.
Right. I think that's one of the things that we're really trying for, especially at a tasting like this, is to get the people to understand that one of the things about biodynamics and organic is responsibility and accessibility, and that what we're putting out there is we're responsible for it, and anyone that tastes that wine can come back to us and talk to us about it. It's not just falling into the dark hole. I mean, it's really important to be accountable for what you're doing, and that's one of the things that we're pushing for, is to get ingredient labels back onto wine or into wine for the first time, and if you happen to use the sulfites, how much are you putting into the wine?
You know, I think the big guys may get a little nervous when you start to throw that around, just like the major corporations do with food. And
right.
You look at, you know, the documentary that came out, Super Size Me, and the McDonald's Corporation.
Right.
You have to rethink, and people need to be educated. And there's no reason why we can't get back to this kind of pure essence.
Well, and it's small steps. You know, you think globally and you act locally. You know, and if you maintain that philosophy behind it and maintain it on the foods that you eat, then you're not buying into the corporations. You know, I actually have a couple of corporate sponsors that I'm growing organically grown grapes for, and it's I'm their poster child. But there's all of a sudden they start thinking. You know, the other growers that they buy from said, oh, how do you do this? How do you do that? And it's just one little step at a time. Every movement we make in a vineyard, if I put a vine this year, the reaction is going to be 2 or 3 years. So it's small, tiny steps, but it's definitely starting to happen.
Well, you know, one more point on that. When Phil started his vineyard business, we were always very much into putting cover crops down. It's one of the foundations of organic grape growing is cover crops.
Explain that a little bit for the uninitiated.
Well, my brother will explain the ramifications of a cover crops, but it's seed that you're putting into the ground to replenish essentially what you're taking out with the grapes. When we first started, he used to pick up the seeds in his pickup truck. Now, at that point, people used to laugh at us and say, why are you expending more money on something like that you're not going to get back for? Now in Sonoma Valley, you're seeing truck and trailers with seeds on them, putting cover crops, even in conventionally, quote-unquote, conventionally grown vineyards, but they're all caught on to the fact that it's a lot cheaper in the long run to replenish the soil with those products rather than to be putting chemical fertilizers on the ground.
Yeah, you know, I could supply 80% of my plant's nutrients. I could grow it in the vineyard. And a vineyard is a monoculture. So how do I break up a monoculture? From November 1st to April 1st, I have 7, 8, 9, 10 different plants growing out there that are providing insectuaries, they're providing habitat for birds, and they're providing nutrients for my soil. Plus, it breaks that monoculture. And then those are slowly incorporated into the ground, the grapes go to their cycle, and then the cover crops come back in. So you create a different cycle. It's a different rhythm that you have growing in the vineyard.
Now, the biodynamics, where were most of the inroads made? Are you guys making some of the inroads with the wine industry to help spread? I mean, you said yourself, Tony, that a couple of years ago, this event here in New York City would have been maybe three of you guys
right.
in a booth. Now it's jam-packed. You can barely get into this venue
right,
here.
Right. Well, I think there's two things happening, and we need to talk about it in all due respect. Is that one side, there's people here that are using it strictly as a marketing tool, and that's always going to be the case. But I think the vast majority of them here are really concerned and involved in making better wine and making a better habitat in general for everybody. And I think that's ultimately what it is, and I think it's showing. You know, if you talk to these people, the enthusiasm and the passion that they're showing about their products and the grapes and the way that they're growing, it's incredible.
There's a lot of passion upstairs at this tasting, because it's an international tasting. And we have our California contingent, but it's just like any movement that happens, that there's little micro movements going on in other parts of the world. And this information, you know, the world's a lot smaller. You know, there's people up there I email that when I went to Europe in November, I sought out biodynamic organic farms. they knew what was happening in California as I knew what was going on in Tuscany.
Well, tell them that story about the GMO, that initiative. This blows my mind.
I met this biodynamic olive grower in Calchi, which is on the Pisan coast. And the first thing he said, "Oh, you're from Sonoma. What about the GMO, you guys, the anti-GMO platform you're voting on? Did it win? Were you able to stop them?" And I'm going, "Wow, how did you know about this?" And that's, you know, and here's this guy. The last 20 years, he's been growing olive trees on the side of a hill in Tuscany, and being aware of a GMO proposition on our ballot in California.
What do we know about what's going on in his county? I mean, except for my brother going there, nothing.
He gave me a manifesto of his growing method, so all I have to do is translate it now.
Well, see, that's the beauty of the internet. It's the democratization of information. You know, it's like the Gutenberg press. I always say this. It's we've leveled the playing field. Anyone can transfer information, share information with their neighbors.
Yes.
And really, it's without boundaries. It's without culture. It's a wonderful, wonderful device. I mean, this podcast will be heard globally as soon as it's up on our server.
Cool.
And that's what's great. We're hearing it firsthand. We're not reading it. So,
right.
You know, nobody can say, well, you wrote it this way.
Right.
We're hearing
it now.
You remember it this way. So, here's another member of the, here's somebody's wife.
This is the olive oil princess.
The olive oil princess. Yeah, I was going to ask you guys. You guys are making olive oil, which I sampled, which,
yes,
again, is the same premise.
Right, it is. And again, breaking the monoculture, you know, I like to have olive trees planted around my vineyards. I was instrumental about 15, 20 years ago to importing trees from Tuscany to California, and adding another product that fits it right in with the wines. And then you have a tree growing out there, all of a sudden you have an owl's roost, you know, and it brings in other energies to the vineyard.
Biodiversity, man.
Biodiversity, and that's the whole thing. And, you know, it gives me something to pick in the off season.
You know, it's interesting. I was just talking to someone about one of the accreditations or certification outfits in Europe, and one of the things they do is they walk out into a vineyard and they look at a 2 liter or 20 meter area, and they count how many plants are growing in that area as part of their certification.
Yeah.
So we're really working on that guy.
That's really important because, again, you do have, biodiversity is the best thing in the world.
You have to have it.
Yep.
Now, how about just like I was reading about your techniques and the casks that you use. You know, sometimes you go to these tours, you see the big stainless steel.
Right.
You know, they're pumping it out, and you know we know all the big companies. We'd have to name names,
right.
But you guys have gone back to, you know, simpler time with even the storage.
Right. Everything's done in 60 gallon barrels. Wood barrels tend to be French wood. We have a fellow that works for us on site that reconditions the barrels. We have two or three wineries that we buy used barrels from. We take the heads out, recondition the wood. When these guys are through working on red wine barrels, you could put white wine in them. I mean, they're beautifully clean. And that's part of the sustainable, but also keeping the wine. It's getting that nice wood tannin in there in the background of the wine to help hold the wine.
And again, you're recycling, so you're part of, you know, what was before.
And you know, with my brother's styles of wines, the wood is not the driving force, and wood is like garlic in cooking. Sometimes you could go have something and it just overwhelms you with garlic. Sometimes you could drink a wine and it overwhelms you. You're tasting wood, you're not tasting fruit. And so his wines are fruit driven, and so he has the control of this by how they scrape the barrels.
Let's talk a little bit about pop culture and how pop culture is embraced. I think you can maybe even say the last 10 years, certainly the last couple of years in Hollywood. You know, we have so much hyper reality on TV. There's so much crossover. The Food Network is really huge now. We have a young generation who's embracing something that our grandparents already knew about, especially if they were immigrants, which many of them were, and they appreciated wine as being part of the lifestyle. And I think it's a healthier way to look at, you know, an industry as opposed to this sells sex, you know.
I think it's wonderful because in my business, in the vineyard business, over the last 5 or 6 years, I've had kids come up that are, you know, I've been looking for people to work, to do what I did 25 years ago, 30 years ago. And these kids are bringing in a new energy. And they're so, you know, I gave one of my managers, I said, okay, put together the biodynamic calendar for the year, and he just looked at this and ran with it, you know. And it amazes me because it's bringing in new energy. And again, biodiversity, you know, it's not just us old farts out there doing it anymore.
Well, yeah, and on the wine side, what the really interesting thing is the young people are bringing in experimental. They want to see new varietals. They want to see new kinds of wine. because the old Chardonnays and the old Cabs are kind of passing away. Something new, something different, could be a little sweet. It could be from a different region. Indigenous grapes are making a huge comeback. There's places in Italy that have a little area like Umbria could have five or six grapes that you've never heard of before. And that's one of the things that right now Europe is having a hard time selling wine because they got caught up into the Cabernet, the Chardonnay idea. They're trying to make wines like California. The young people are waking up and saying, hey, wait a minute. What did our grandfathers do? Where are these old grapes? And they're coming back. And I think it's just wonderful because that's what's going to save their wine industry, is not trying to be like somebody else, getting back into the indigenous fruit.
And we talked about that on the other day, Tony. We said, you know, like these small companies like yourself, you don't have to produce a large yield to be profitable. You're not being driven by, you know, this holy marketing scheme. And I think the consumer wants to feel like you find a vineyard that represents your personality. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go out and again, buy into this huge mentality. And it's like a lot of things in pop culture. We can have all these small niches in music, right, in film, in television. You know, the internet, again, it democratizes everything. You can have your favorite website that could have a lot of different information on it, or just one specific brand of information.
And you're seeing it, you know, we were at the Green Market over the weekend on Union Square. And, you know, I'd go up and talk to these guys. Hey, I'm a farmer from California. And we'd exchange ideas, but I'm eating, you know, local cheeses, you know, and there was local meats there. And I was just, wow, you know, this is where it's supposed to be, you know. And it's, you know, you see it throughout Europe. And in the United States, it's taken on, you know. I mean, I don't know what's going on in the Midwest, but I know in the East Coast and the West Coast, it's happening.
You know? Well, I think if you get a Whole Foods in there, somebody who is, like, you know, trying to maintain the spirit, or the indie, you know, most of the time you have to be in a college campus town where they embrace the thinking, but, yeah, you know.
Well, but they're opening up three new Whole Foods in Manhattan in the
That's
next
right.
year.
Yeah.
No, it makes it's healthy, you know, more alternatives, you know, and when the kids realize that spinach doesn't come frozen in a box, it tastes so much better, especially if you put some fresh olive oil on it and then have a nice glass of Couture wine.
Oh, yeah. Hey, now we're talking. Now we're talking. I got to ask you, Tony was called the Eddie Van Halen of the wine industry. Right. How did that happen?
You know, it was such a fortuitous thing. We ended up, some guy phoned up one day and he said, hey, I hear you make organic wine. And I said, yeah. He goes, could I come over? I said, yeah, come on over. And actually, he's in the room today. He's Jonathan Russo. He's an artist agent, but he's very concerned, very interested in the organic world. He started the Organic Wine Journal upstairs. So he said, Tony, what can I do for you? He said, well, buy some wine in Manhattan. He said, no, I could do that. He ends up making a movie of Paul and I, 3 days in Manhattan, marketing wine and interviewing people and talking to them. And it's just, it's a great document, like looking at it, what it takes to take these kinds of wine to New York. And after I left, they started asking people, what do you think about this? What do you think? That's Tony Couture, he's the Van Halen of wine.
Yeah, but you also have the whole ethos. You grew up, you guys were in San Francisco.
Right.
You were there during the glory years, the renaissance of music, really, if
right.
you really want to break it down. So you came up with, you know, a very colorful lifestyle. People really embraced a sensibility, a sensibility to life that maybe, you know, we focused on the negative aspects of that lifestyle, you know. Maybe we need to get back to that communal.
Well, you know, it's interesting because that lifestyle, you know, being the deadhead for the last 35 years, you know, and the people that I've hung out with the last 35 years, when one of them just gets made head of Google's nonprofit organization.
We love that.
Larry Brilliant. You know, brilliant man.
Yeah.
And what he said, we're doing this to bring morality back into the world.
Amen.
It shows that we're doing the right thing. You know, it's like Wavy Gravy is a big fan of our wines, and I couldn't ask. That's the type of person I wanted to drink a wine. A person that smiles. You know.
Well, you know, and even to the shows that Bill Graham used to do, where he used to have Cold Blood, you know, Doug Kershaw, The Doors, and Commander Cody. I mean, that's what we're living.
That's
now.
Biodiversity.
That's biodiversity. Yeah. That's why it's in our heads.
Old diversity.
we don't want a whole metal band playing. We want 10 different kinds of
right.
music, you know?
And we've lost that, you know, with the radio stations. You go to program
Everyone's
one aspect.
Program, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You've got a niche market, only that. You can't share, all of music.
And the more you expose people to things, that they latch on to it. And that's the whole thing of biodiversity. That's why biodiversity in the vineyard, I might have a plant that attracts a certain insect that takes care of another problem. And that's the same thing's going to be with music. You give people 10 choices, they're going to expand intellectually.
Yeah. Well, see, I've always maintained the Grateful Dead were the great purveyors of the American songbook. They didn't just tackle psychedelic rock. Yeah, they played long jams, but they had country, they had bluegrass, they had every genre of music happening in their music.
Yeah. Yeah. They knew their roots.
Yeah.
And that's roots are really important, you know, especially in my business.
That's a great quote.
Yeah,
we could use that, I think.
Yeah, put it on a bottle.
Now, you said something, speaking of, if you could label your bottle, it would just be what?
Just grapes. There's nothing added to it at all.
I think that's a great marketing.
Which it makes so common sense. I mean, I think most people think that that's what wine's about. And I mean, like we alluded to earlier, if they knew the reality of what's going on in the wine business, it would be a much different wine business.
How about a movie like Sideways? Was that a good thing for your industry?
Yeah, you know, it was a good thing for, you know, my brother doesn't go to the movies. No, he doesn't.
I saw that movie.
It was a good thing for Pinot Noir. You know,
you can't find Pinot Noir.
Yeah, you can't.
And Merlot is in the ditch. You know?
And you know, all advertisement is good. I'm glad they didn't do it in my hometown. it pervades. It shows what part of it, what part of the lifestyle is like. You know, and we do have an attractive lifestyle working in the vineyards and making wine. You know, it couldn't be. You know. It's a lot of hours, but it's a very nice place, nice job to have.
Right, right. Now, Tony, you said that rock and roll and music and wine, the senses.
Right.
How does that relate?
So one of the things you get to when you're tasting wine is, besides tasting the wine as a unit, you start breaking down the various components of it. And I look at it, I don't even have to look at it that way. When you listen to music, you can listen to the whole thing as a unit, or you start breaking down the individual instruments and listening to them and how they work in the totality of the sound. And the sense of taste and the sense of hearing are senses that aren't really put at a premium in our society. We're a visual society. And our sense of taste and smell are probably the last that really get any look at, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, the education, the hearing, because musicians are really working on it, but the sense of taste is something that, you know, so many times we have people that drink our wines and maybe we have a Zin that's a little sweet. They stop as soon as they taste the sweetness and I say, go all the way to the end and see how it ends. See how that finishes and comes back to the front. And it's a revelation to a lot of people that there is more, that it just doesn't stop someplace and then you go on. And I think that's a really important thing, because that's why we got the sense of, that's why we can taste things, you know?
Very nice point. You were going to add something to that, Phil?
I was, but I can't remember. We've been out here since 10 o'clock tasting wine. So.
That's a tough life.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to do it, man. You've got the kids involved now.
Yeah, my son's coming into the business. Nick's turned 21 in December, and he's really turned on to the idea. I mean, he was getting ready to go, or he was graduating from high school, and I said, Nick, where do you want to go? He goes, Dad, all my friends are going to college, and all it is a continuation of high school. I want to stay here and learn what you're doing. And then we had this great bonding thing at the harvest. You know, we had a 12-hour day, and we're walking back into the house to have dinner. I said, see, Nick, no matter what happens, if you decide to do this or not, you had a day like this. And he goes, Dad, this is going to be it for me.
I love that. That's a great sentiment.
Yeah.
You guys have a really wonderful website.
Oh, thank you.
And I love the, you got a little flash animation going with you guys.
Yeah,
with
the
your
talking,
animation.
Talking,
the talking
I
heads.
So, I get so much. That's all.
I'm telling you, can get lost. I spent a good couple hours on the website this morning, which is rare when you go to a corporate website. Mm-hmm. Usually it's just like, you know, this is our mission statement and this is where we are. And if you need to contact us and you have a problem. But you guys have embraced, again, I see your cultural backgrounds creeping into every aspect of your business.
There always has to be a little bit of hilarity in it, you know. It was not
self-deprecating.
Yeah, I mean, you can't take ourselves too seriously.
Well, I think also having that stuff about our grandfather there with the boat that he came over and when he signed his name. That, I mean, how many people know about that?
Yeah.
Their own families, you know.
Yeah.
They're just gone. All that.
Yeah, it was interesting because I was just in Lucca, where my grandfather was from, last November, and you know, all of a sudden, this is the first time I was in that part of Tuscany. And, you know, I'm walking down, I see all my cousins, they look like walking down the street. So you get an idea of heritage again, you know. It's you got to get back to the roots.
You know? Did you ride the bicycle around the wall?
No, I didn't ride the bicycle. I walked around the wall. It was too cold to ride a bike.
That's a great town. Lucca is one of the great Tuscan towns.
Beautiful place.
Unbelievable, yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
Good food stuff, you know.
Where do you guys see, how do you avoid jumping the shark? How do you get, you know, avoid getting so big that suddenly you're producing so much grape for the outside, you just want to insulate yourself? Do you know, is there a sense of how you maintain your equilibrium?
It's pretty much self-managed, self-controlled in that, you know, like I say, I grow a lot more grapes than my brother uses. You know, he has, the way he's making wine, he's pretty much maxed out to produce for the quality control that he has. And like myself and my vineyard management company, I'm always careful on taking on new projects because there is so much attention and detail that has to maintain. And what we've been able to do is, like I said earlier, bring in some young blood to make it fresh and to make expansion occur. You know?
Well, and also the beauty of making wine like we do is if people, you know, one person come up and say, this is the best wine that I've ever had. The next guy come up and literally spit it out and say, what are you doing? This is not commercial wine. You can't sell it. So I never get a big head on. I mean, it's like, sure. I mean, that's the beauty of it. There's something for everyone. And the French have a saying, you know, every bottle has its place on the table. And that's all I want. That's all we want. We don't want to be the biggest, best, this, that, that. Just give me my space. Let me find the people that like what we're doing. And we're happy.
Yeah. Make a statement. You make a statement with the 5,000 bottles and 5,000 cases, and that's, you know, it's an alternative.
All right, we're gonna have a little fun here, guys. This is not fair, but just whatever pops in your mind. You had to pick a song that represents each bottle this year, because I know it's going. You know, what song represents the ethos, pathos, and spirit of Couture Wines? Oh, is it too complex?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Do you listen to music when you're out in the field?
Do I listen to music when I'm out in the field? Yeah, not as much as I did before because my cell phone rings too often. But yeah. I listen to music constantly, you know, from Bloomfield to Garcia, you know.
There we go.
And that's,
you know what's really interesting is when I turned 50 years old, I always wanted to learn to play the saxophone. So I took lessons, I tried for 3 years, and it just didn't work. And then this guy out of the blue calls me up and said, hey, I had a bottle of your Pinot Noir, and I really like, turns out, and he's here today, I never met him till today, Benny Wallace. He's a traditional, he plays jazz saxophone from the 50s, and he came up out here, and we're just like friends that never met. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, how, you know, we put our arms around and say, hey, man. And that's like, if everybody could be a winemaker, there wouldn't be any needs for, if everybody could be a musician, we wouldn't need musicians.
And, you know, my neighbor is Kurt Hammett from Metallica. Yeah, you know, I'm not... You know, I'm a deadhead, but you know, I went down to the Fillmore and they played. They gave me some earplugs before I went in. But at least, when Kirk's playing at his property, and I could hear it at my house. He's, you know, the grapes are picking on a little bit of an edge. So you know, we're multicultural there.
There we go. Good answer, Phil. Well, I think we've got it, guys. I want to thank the Couture brothers, Phil and Tony. You guys are doing something that I think is fantastic. We're re-educating the masses, and I think this broadcast will really help people introduce them to a whole new way of looking at grapes that perhaps they didn't look at before.
Well, Dusty, it was our pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Invite them to come to the Couture website.
All right, we'll have a link on the site.
Right.
We'll talk to you soon. Dusty Wright for the Culture Catch. Converge is the word.
There you go.
Sit there a crying, riding your beer. You say you've got troubles. My friend, listen here. Don't tell me your troubles. I got enough of my own. Thankful you're living. Drink up and go home. Thank you.
6 years in the pen. Lost my wife and family. No one to call friend. Don't tell me your trouble. I got enough of my own. Be thankful you're living. Drink up and go home. He can't see. Do you think he's complaining? Why should you or me? Don't tell me your troubles. I got enough of my own. Be thankful you're living.
You've been listening to The Culture Catch. I'd like to thank today's sponsors, DLO, Digital Lifestyle Outfitters. DLO has now released the Home Dock Deluxe. You need a place to put your iPod? Check out the DLO Home Dock Deluxe at DLO.com. And of course, our fine friends at WebHSP.com for all of your web hosting needs, WebHSP.com. And finally, our friends at Final Draft. Final Draft has the greatest scriptwriting software on the planet. You don't believe me? I use it. I've used it for a while now. I won't look at anything else, and I won't use anything else. FinalDraft.com. We'll see you next time. Converge is the word. Papa Umau Mau.